In this unit, we will cover quality measurement and improvement. Here are the topics we will cover in this unit. In this segment, we will talk about the state of quality of care in the United States. In the following segments, we will look at the definitions and operationalization of quality measurement and improvement. We will then look at quality measures that are used. We'll discuss the role of information technology and informatics in quality measurement and improvement. We'll look at some results of current approaches, discuss challenges, limitations, and ethical issues, and finally discuss quality measurement and improvement under the meaningful use rules. Is healthcare quality as good as it could be in the United States? Some argue not. In the following slides, we'll see examples of things that should correctly be done but are not done, these being errors of omission. We'll also see that there are incorrect things that are done, these being errors of commission. And finally, we'll see that there's variation in care, where there's no relationship between what is done or what it costs and its quality. Well, what do we know about healthcare quality? Let's start by talking about errors of omission. The most well-known and widely cited study came from McGlynn and colleagues in the prestigious New England Journal of Medicine. And these researchers asked adults in 12 U.S. metropolitan areas to provide access to their medical records. They got about 7,000 adults who agreed to do this, and their medical records were assessed for 30 common conditions. And for each condition, they had indicators of quality of care, the right thing that should be done based on the evidence. And these were not esoteric things, but rather tests, treatments, etc., that are known to be the best approach for these given conditions. On average, only 54.9% of the care delivered was consistent with the best known quality. NCQA, which is a healthcare quality organization, puts out an annual report on quality where they look at gaps between the 90th percentile quality organization and the average quality organization. And from those gaps, they can determine the number of avoidable deaths and avoidable medical costs. The last analysis, published in 2009 on data from 2008, found that there were 49 to 115,000 avoidable deaths and $12 billion in avoidable medical costs due to the gap between the highest quality and the actual quality delivered. Other studies done, such as this one by Schoen and colleagues, found that the quality of care for patients with chronic diseases is no better and in many ways worse in the United States than for other developed countries. Another way to look at healthcare quality is amenable mortality. This is mortality that could be prevented with timely and effective health care. And these researchers have done a couple analyses, the last one published in 2008, looking at how many deaths could be avoided with timely and effective health care. So this excludes things like lifestyle factors, accidents, and so forth. It focuses on conditions where death can be prevented with timely and effective health care. And again, the U.S. ranks last among 14 advanced countries that they studied in amenable mortality. While some may argue, nonetheless, when you're sick in the United States, you have a better chance of surviving your illness. The quality of the care is better. And that is true for some things, particularly cancer treatment. And this figure, which actually comes from the New York Times and is a compilation of statistics,
looks at 5-year survival rates for different conditions, and the U.S. does well in breast cancer. However, in kidney transplant, we trail most of the other advanced countries of the world. Childhood leukemia, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and colorectal cancer were right in the middle. So the U.S. healthcare system is not necessarily a guarantee that you're going to be treated more successfully for conditions that you develop. So in addition to errors of omission, we have errors of commission, and these are errors that are made in the provision of healthcare, things that should not be done but that are done. And of course, this problem was widely brought to light by the publication of the Institute of Medicine to Errors Human Report in 2000. And this report concluded that anywhere from 48,000 to 96,000 deaths in the United States could be attributable to preventable medical errors. Some argued that these numbers were too high, though the researchers who came up with them rebutted, and others claimed that it was really difficult to measure this sort of thing because it was done by reviewing hospital charts, and you don't always know the context of which the care was provided. But there are other analyses that give credence to the claim that significant numbers of people are dying from medical errors. One study, it's actually an ongoing study published each year by HealthGrades, finds comparable numbers. And we know, for example, that there are a substantial number of preventable adverse drug events that occur in elderly patients. Our informatics colleague Dan Macy's has taken the CDC's common list of leading causes of death and actually pasted medical errors in there, showing that if the high-end number is true, medical errors is actually one of the leading causes of death in the United States, higher than accidents, diabetes, suicide, etc. Another healthcare quality problem that received a lot of attention in the early efforts of the Obama administration to undertake healthcare reform concerns variation in services. This is something that's actually been known for a couple decades, and the research existed quietly before a number of advocates in 2009 started talking about it in the halls of government, the popular press, and so forth. The Dartmouth Atlas Project has, again, been around for about 2 decades, and it has shown substantial variation in care for many conditions across the United States. Yet, despite all those variations, it's not clear that there is much difference in quality. Certainly, there are few measurable outcomes that show that those who get more services have better overall outcomes. So, for example, variation in chronic illness care is so substantial that reducing the level of care to the most efficient providers could reduce expenditures by 30% without any apparent change in any type of clinical outcome. Healthcare costs vary widely across different regions in the United States. And most of the explanation is the behavior of physicians in terms of choosing to order tests, to prescribe medications, to do surgeries, and so forth. So again, this issue came to light in the 2009 healthcare reform debate, and perhaps one of the major reasons for it to come to light was a highly quoted and popularized article by Atul Gawande in The New Yorker looking at variation in healthcare spending in 2 communities in Texas. So the Dartmouth Atlas consists of graphs like this one that look at Medicare spending per beneficiary in different parts around the country. And it's well known, for example, in places like New York, Boston, Texas, Florida, there is very high levels of spending as opposed to places like Oregon, Wisconsin, Utah, etc. Yet there is no apparent difference in patient outcomes, as we'll see in a moment, for these different levels of spending. Here's another well-known graph from the Dartmouth Atlas looking at the rate of coronary artery bypass surgery per Medicare enrollee. And again, there are parts of the country, particularly in the Southeast and the upper Midwest, where the rates are much higher than other parts of the country, such as Oregon, Southern California, and a few other places. Here's another Dartmouth Atlas graph, the variation in hospital beds per 1,000 residents. Again, very high in the Southeast, much lower in the West. I personally noticed this myself in 1990 when I relocated from Boston to Oregon and really saw different approaches taken to hospitalizing patients. Some of the variation is explained by so-called supply-sensitive factors. That is, the more supply there is of something, the more it's used. So if you plot out the number of cardiologists by the number of visits to cardiologists, you see this gradually increasing line. Similarly, for the number of acute care beds plotted out against the hospital discharge rate. So the more cardiologists, the more beds, there tends to be more utilization of services in different settings around the United States. But there is one area where there is no variation, and that is in quality measures. So if you plot out Medicare spending and correlate that with medical specialist visits, hospital days, percent admitted to ICUs, again, the more medical specialists there are, the more hospitals, the more spending there is. But if you look at the flat line on the bottom, this is an effective care index. It's an aggregation of healthcare quality measures. That number actually stays the same no matter what the level of spending. So the more you spend does not necessarily result in higher quality care. In fact, one study actually shows an inverse relationship between quality. This graph contains a ranking of the states by quality plotted against Medicare spending. And as you can see, there are certain low spending, high quality states like New Hampshire, Utah, Oregon, Hawaii, and there are other states that have higher rates of spending while they have lower quality. Now, the probable explanation for this is not so much that there's worse care delivered in these states, but that the care is less coordinated, which results in reduced quality measures and increased spending. Well, there's more on the theme of more is not better. We know, for example, that more care of chronic diseases is not associated with longer life or better quality of life. Another hospital level analysis continues to support this notion that there's no or even a negative correlation between spending versus quality. There is some data that shows lower cost hospitals have modestly lower quality care, but when you actually risk adjust them for other factors, that difference goes away.